Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio.
Final hour of the show, the program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Just one more hour that you have to put up with yours truly in the chair, and then you got a weekend to enjoy. Most importantly, Jim Rome back from vacation on Monday. Congrats again to Jim for the news that was long overdue. He's on his way to the Radio Hall of Fame. Always a distinct honor to be in this studio because I mention it every time I'm here, but the audience always changes in radio. Hopefully it's pretty clear. I've been a clone for the better part of 20 years. Best part of the fill-in experience. I know it's rough when Jim's not here, but it was rewarding to listen to the other folks sitting in for Jim talk about their admiration for a man who's changed our business. So you had Kyle Brandt making his return to the jungle on Monday, telling it like it is. If Kyle's not the producer of this program, you would not be seeing him on NFL Network today. JT the Brick went from stockbroker in San Diego to a media sensation. Bill Ryder was plucked from being a panelist on Jim's old TV show to a variety of platforms, including CBS Sports Radio. So we all owe a debt to Jim, not only for the ability to fill in, but for changing the way this business operates. Because if you were listening to Sports Talk Radio 20 years ago when I started, I'm sure my show was part of the list of lame programs you were avoiding if you had to put up with me on KMBR 1050 in San Francisco. Jim changed the entire industry, and we're all in his debt for his innovation and the way he revolutionized what we do in sports media. If you want to be a part of the show, here's how the final hour plays out. We're talking NFL preseason here. Coming up in 35 minutes, we'll be joined by our final guest, that's Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com, meaning if you want to slide in, hop aboard at 1-800-636-8686. If the calls are good, according to Garrett Ritz, I'll take a call or two coming up in 15 minutes. Emails, RomanAvatake.com, Twitter, B.W. Weber. Hearing from my good friend, the 12-wood, who has built a cottage industry based on this program. I've been a guest on the Woodscopes twice. 12-wood, good take on the Packers. I'm a Packer fan, too. I know that. I've been on your show. However, my opinion isn't popular. I trade the other 12, obviously a Brett Favre fan here, for a young, zealous quarterback like Mayfield or Mahomes in a heartbeat. All right. Not only has my man the Woodscopes gotten bigger than me, now he's got hotter takes than I. Let's slow down before we anoint the Cleveland Browns as anything more than a team that's in playoff contention. Because as we sift through what happened last night with the 11 preseason matchups, and yes, Kyler Murray was sharp in his debut for Arizona, but if you stayed up late on the East Coast to watch that game, you know they were running vanilla sets on both sides of the ball. He operated solely from a shotgun, and he was just thrown to the sideline, but he didn't wet the bed, to use the vernacular. Daniel Jones was effective in a meaningless preseason game, but given all the consternation that Dave Gettleman had no idea what he was doing, throwing away a top 10 pick on a quarterback from Duke, a lot of people didn't think belonged in the first round. At least Jones looks like he can play in the NFL, but it's week one of the preseason, and as we forecast how things are going to come together when we get to week one of the NFL, roughly a month from now, so much hype surrounds what's going on in Cleveland. And I know whose studio I'm sitting in. And I watch a lot of TV and listen to a lot of radio. When I saw Jim talking about the Cleveland Browns a year ago on the NFL Today as Baker Mayfield mania was running wild, so I'm not contradicting the best in the business. I'm just offering a different perspective. How about that for splitting the difference? Because while I understand how we have arrived at a time in the history of the NFL when Cleveland has buzz and hope surrounding it, I do have to view things with a degree of skepticism because we're not playing fantasy football here. Things have to coalesce on and off the field. And I think the off-the-field component is going to be as big a concern for the Browns as what's going to happen between the lines. But that's meaningful as well, because even though Odell Beckham Jr. didn't play last night, he has dominated the offseason as much as Baker Mayfield has in Cleveland. Coming down to what OBJ has been saying, not doing. So unlike the long list of things I could rattle off, the video with the model and the half-eaten pizza and the mysterious white powdery substance, the nonsense with the kicking net, the dog impersonation on the road in Philadelphia, Odell Beckham Jr. has been talking a lot this offseason and this summer. Primarily to outlets like GQ Magazine, because we know he's into fashion and that's cool. And I am not anti-Odell Beckham Jr. I think he is a transcendent talent. I'd be a fool to try to diminish what he has done to start a brilliant career. And in many ways, he's exactly what the NFL needs. If you want to talk about demographics, and I know football is king, it's the one sport that's been bulletproof when it comes to ratings, although if you care about the Hall of Fame game, and I think it was a byproduct of the game being played on a Thursday again, ratings slightly down when the Broncos and the Ravens kick things off. The real number is going to come up when we get to the regular season. But football could use more personalities like Odell Beckham Jr. Listen to what I just said, and now let's do the pivot together. The NBA is cool. Because so many of you young people, and yes, in my mid to late 40s, I'm old, get off my lawn. But there's a connection between the Instagram generation and NBA stars because they feel like they know these guys on and off the court. And they're following what they're doing and the clothes they're wearing and the rappers that they like to hang out with. Odell is bringing that NBA swag to the NFL, and there's nothing wrong with it so long as it doesn't interfere with how things play out in the locker room in a sport that hinges not only on physicality but emotion, because you only play 16 of these games, and they're all meaningful. So when Odell Beckham Jr. told GQ that he's in for the long haul in Cleveland, it's not going to be a cameo, at least 5 years, and the goal is to have a renaissance, make the Browns into a new version of the Patriots. Yes, that was ludicrous to say and completely over the top. I can understand the sentiment. What's he supposed to say? We're going to be terrible? Yeah, I want to go 0-16 again, and let's bring back Hugh Jackson. I understand the balancing act here. But when you distort expectations in a league in which the margin between a team that goes to the playoffs and one that's 2-14 is closer than you think, it might be a little bit wise to try to control that narrative and say, yeah, I love this team. I'm so happy to be reunited with my LSU teammate, Jarvis Landry. Baker Mayfield can make all the throws. Now let's go do it on the field. But this is feeling a little bit like that old dream team experiment with the Philadelphia Eagles. Remember that circa 2012? Well, it seemed like that team was going to break through, and we know what happened when games that mattered actually occurred. So my biggest moment of reflection when it comes to Cleveland is, what happens if we play the what-if game? What happens if they have a slow start with all of these high-voltage personalities? Not just Odell Beckham Jr. Baker Mayfield feeds on emotion. Do you see him losing his mind, doing the paparazzi pose after that touchdown? And yes, it was a nice throw, capping a nice drive in a playoff game against a preseason game against a terrible Washington team that's not going to sniff the playoffs. Or Baker Mayfield doing his dance when Freddie Kitchens threw out the red flag to challenge. And you got an unproven head coach who's never had that kind of responsibility on any level, who basically, according to reports, and you got to believe guys like Bob Wiley, who told CBS Sports Radio and made national headlines in that conversation with Zach Gelb that he believes, and maybe Bob's disgruntled because he didn't keep his job, the sole reason Freddie Kitchens got the gig was Baker Mayfield likes him. Well, if that's the case, you think Freddie Kitchens is going to be able to coach him up? How is he going to have that rapport that you need as an effective head coach that hinges on respect and, to a degree, fear? I just don't see it necessarily working right now, especially when Cleveland could deal with adversity. Because if we go through the schedule, they open up against a Tennessee Titan team that has something to prove, especially when it comes down to the quarterback position, because Marcus Mariota is playing to get the long-term extension he's looking for, and a lot of that's going to come down to, can he stay healthy? But that's not a gimme win or a pushover opponent for the Browns week one. Week two, they play the Jets. They should win that game. Week three, they host the Rams, who are going through their own issues because we still don't know if Todd Gurley is 100% to start the year after his disappearing act, not only down the stretch and in the playoffs. Remember, it was C.J. Anderson who ran the ball well for the Rams in the postseason. Todd Gurley was MIA in the Super Bowl for the Rams. But I'd still like L.A. in that game. Then it's Cleveland against the old Browns, the Ravens on the road in Baltimore. I'm a bigger believer than Lamar Jackson, in Lamar Jackson than many national observers because I watched what he did in college. And if you noticed last night, I know it's a preseason game. He didn't run that much. And I think you're going to see the offense evolve. So let's talk worst case scenario. They're not losing to the Jets. But let's say it's a sluggish start. They're 1-3. What is the emotional tone in that locker room going to be like? And who's going to tell Odell Beckham Jr. to calm down when he has his latest meltdown that you know is coming? Now, maybe I'm dead wrong. Maybe the change of scenery will lead to a change in mindset for Odell Beckham Jr. Maybe he's grown up in the offseason. Maybe reuniting with Jarvis Landry will change everything. Maybe he and Baker Mayfield are going to shock the league and take Cleveland to where they rarely have been. Let's just start with making the playoffs. Forget about their first trip to the Super Bowl, which strikes me as nonsensical to talk about. But we do this every summer. We fall in love with a team based on how the depth chart looks. Especially now in the age of social media, it's an echo chamber. You look for affirmation of your own perspective. And I'm just saying, let's have this conversation when we get to October and see what the Browns actually are able to achieve when they get to games that mean something and how the chemistry and cohesion play out. It's going to either be a marvelous sight to behold, or it could be an implosion. Either way, it's going to be fun to discuss and chop up here in the content creating business. The phone number is 1-800-636-8686. Coming up in 25 minutes, back to the preseason takeaways when we're joined by our final guest. That's Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. We'll talk about Kyler Murray. We'll discuss Daniel Jones. Also, the latest on the holdout situations for both Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon. You want to hit me up with your computer, you can email me, RomanHavatake.com, Twitter, open for business, it's B.W. Weber. Coming up, a little bit more college football, because it's 2 weeks away, in addition to what we discussed when we were joined by P. Futak from CollegeFootballNews.com in the last hour of the show. Has the college football playoff that we waited decades for lessened our interest in the regular season? We're heading on campus coming up. I'm Brian Weber. You're in the jungle on a Friday, in for Jim Rome here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Brian Weber with you, in for Jim Rome. It's CBS Sports Radio. Home stretch. Final show without Jim. He returns from the basement on Monday. If you want to be a part of the program, at this point, you got to hit me up with a tweet or an email. Emails, RomanHavatake.com, because in less than 20 minutes, it's back to the NFL conversation. The takeaways, if you care about what happens in preseason games, from the matchups last night when we check in with Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. Couple emails to make sure we are comprehensive with the approach. Reaction to the Raider analysis earlier in the program. Dear Weber with two B's, we've had a lot of interaction with Raider fan too. Regards, toenail shivs, vomit, and the Oakland PD. Francis in Glendale wore Irate Craig using a lobster shell as an athletic cup. That's going in the time capsule. Thank you, Ike. Garrett Ritt doing it all today. Another email. Hi, Brian. I'm willing to bet an entire month's salary that if there were, in fact, a Blue Bonnet Bowl still being played, the Raiders would lose. War Raider Mike, being the best part about the Raiders, wore the NHL season starting in just 57 days. Bell will be in Calgary. Oh, it's a power play goal. And now we got news to discuss. Oh, and it actually dovetails to what I was throwing out there about the Cleveland Browns. According to Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, Browns receiver Antonio Callaway being suspended 4 games for a violation of the league's substance abuse policy. He is appealing the ruling. Cleveland is going to have some chemistry issues. They got to figure out how this team coalesces. Yeah, there's a ton of skill on both sides of the football, but step one is to be eligible to play. And obviously, Cleveland's gone through this before with Josh Gordon, as we hope he has a chance to put his personal life in order, trying to get back into the NFL. Okay, trying to have a balanced program. And I know the NFL is the behemoth that dominates everything in its path, and the audience is always right. So we've talked NFL 95% of the program. I do want to squeeze in a little bit more college football because this is my last opportunity to talk college with you before the season kicks off, and we're just 2 weeks away. And the balancing act between the NFL and college football is they are separate entities while you have the marriage of the NFL draft. And what makes college football so unique comes down to your personal allegiance to your alma mater or your region or your conference. So much of it is emotion driven. And I don't want college football to be exactly like the NFL. But it is interesting because so many of you would love football 52 weeks a year, and we're getting closer because the return of, can I do it 2 hours and 30 minutes in? XFL is months away. We're going to go right from the Super Bowl to Vince McMahon's second attempt at professional football. And it's going to work this time because you got a billionaire who's willing to bet on his legacy, and he's not going to make the same mistakes as, say, putting Jerry the King Lawler in the booth this time, although any broadcast with a guy yelling puppies is worth listening to. And it's going to be fascinating to see how much money he potentially throws at, say, Trevor Lawrence. Because if you go back to the early days of the USFL, one of the ways that they generated relevance was throwing money at college stars like Herschel Walker and Steve Young. So I think the XFL is going to work. I thought the Alliance of American Football was watchable. The problem was cash. And Charlie Ebersole might have dated Britney Spears and has a famous father, but they ran out of money. So we have this insatiable appetite for football, but for some reason, college football, from a financial standpoint, talking ratings and attendance, is going through a little bit of a down cycle. Ratings were flat last year while the NFL was up. Attendance is a real issue. In fact, I have no life. I looked up the factoid. Across major college football, attendance down 7 of the last 8 years. Last season, lowest average attendance number altogether in 22 years. Now, there are a few theories about what's going on when you think about butts and seats. And Pat Fitzgerald is a smart guy. He played his college ball at Northwestern, now their head coach. He says people are staying away from going to games because the whole world is on their phone.
You know, Stacey and I were out on a date last night, and there was two groups of couples sitting next to us, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm old. Like, not one of the four couples were talking to each other. They were all on their phones, and it just drove me up to, I literally wanted to be like a dad and go, like, give me your phone, talk to each other. I mean, this is pathetic. So it was really, really pathetic, and I think that's just, it's just changed the way a lot of younger people and younger fans intake is all through technology. And I mean, you watch a concert and everybody's holding their phone up like, listen, watch, take it in.
Intriguing theory, but here's the pushback. Couldn't you bring your phone to the game? Isn't that what most people do? So I think there are larger factors at play. And because this is a personal medium, and anybody who gets in the radio wants to talk about themselves. Look, those of us who are part of the older generation remember, when you went to college football games, primarily you did it to consume alcohol if you could, or just get out of the dorm. Now, if you love sports, there was a different motivation, but it was a social experience. I don't think that has completely changed. Yeah, Netflix dominates the world, but you can be watching it on your phone. So why are people not going to the games? I think there is a financial component, and it's not cheap, all in, even if you can walk as a student, not have to pay for parking. Add it all up, you're going to be throwing a good deal of money into the business proposition of attending a college football game. But I think the other more important element here is, if you're not willing to watch these games on TV based on the downtick in ratings, why in the hell would you go in person? And we discussed this with Pete Futak from collegefootballnews.com in the last hour of the show. Some of this comes down to the separation between the haves and the have-nots, talking about the major powers, the handful of teams that have a legitimate chance of actually winning it all. And then secondly, we know they're going to be a series of patsy on the schedule in the months of September. But if you go around the ACC and the SEC, it is a joke that Clemson is going to load up in November, taking on Wofford. And Alabama gets a body bag game against the Catamounts of Western Carolina before the Iron Bowl. I don't care if you have 19 Roll Tide tattoos across your body, you're not going to that game. And then there is the notion of predictability, because for all of the excitement on a college football Saturday, it starts noon Eastern. You can ride it all day long until Pac-12 after dark if you really want to maximize your day, stay up for Hawaii football. And there'll be a wave of upsets because we're talking about tonnage. Quantity is quality in college football. When we sort through the process, what are we talking about? The same teams every year since we got to this playoff that so many of us demanded for decades. And clearly it's a better solution than the old process of crowning a mythical national champion thanks to the AP or the UPI and split polls back in the day. Yes, you want to use logic and actually play it out on the field. But here we are, 2 weeks away from another season with Clemson favored to win it all again. And they've been a mainstay in the playoffs. Same thing with Alabama. Maybe Bama goes down, but if Georgia beats them or anybody beats them in the SEC, we know the SEC champion has an automatic bid, in essence, into the college football playoff. If Notre Dame's in contention again, they're certainly going back because the selection committee is going to pick the Irish because they know what it means for TV ratings. It's the exact opposite of the NFL with the parity and the chaos within divisions and that trend that won't go away. 15 of the last 16 years, somebody's gone from worst to first to win the division. We're talking about the Cleveland Browns finally being relevant. That would never happen in college football because it's gotten so top heavy and because it's gotten predictable. So if you know or have a strong sense of the majority of the four teams, they're going to have a chance to play for the national championship. If you're trying to be at least rational with how you're spending your money and your time, Why are you going to watch these games? Or better yet, why are you going to show up in person? Still, it's going to be great to have college football back in 2 weeks, because if you just want to sit on your couch and soak it in, nothing better than a college football Saturday. With our remaining time, if you want to chime in, you got to email me at RomanHaveATake.com or tweet at me, B.W. Weber. Coming up, we'll focus on Kyler Murray, who won the Heisman Trophy last year at Oklahoma, looked good last night in limited action in his pro debut for Arizona. How effective will he be in his rookie season? Talking more NFL when we're joined by Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com. But first, it's time for a sports update. Brian Weber back with you, in for Jim Rome here on CBS Sports Radio, final segment, and then thankfully Jim is back on Monday. When he returns, send him your Ask the Pros question, where you, the clones, get to submit a question at CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Let's talk more NFL with one of the best in the business. It's Josh Alper from ProFootballTalk.com, part of Mike Florio's media empire. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We got football back.
11 games last night, and we watched all the big moments. Let's start with what happened in the late window for the folks on the East Coast. Kyler Murray looked sharp in his Arizona debut. Josh, what are your expectations for Murray and Cliff Kingsbury this season in the Valley of the Sun?
It's interesting. Murray looked great. He threw the ball with a lot of zip, looked totally in command, totally ready to go as a starting quarterback. And the thing to me that really stuck out to me was that it's not the offense that I expect them to be playing once the regular season comes along. The tempo was not fast. They had tight ends on the field. They were huddling. Those are all things that Cliff Kingsbury did not do in college when he was coaching Texas Tech. Those were things that Kyler Murray didn't do when he was quarterbacking Oklahoma. So it was interesting to see them go that route, and I think a smart move to get everybody comfortable, get them on field, and obviously you're not going to be giving away the store in preseason. So I'm really interested to see now what happens in week one of the regular season and what that fully engaged offense looks like. But I mean, it couldn't have been a better start for the Kyler Murray era in Arizona.
How about another rookie who, when he was selected at number 6 in the first round, Giant fans were losing their minds. Now, based on going 5-for-5 with a touchdown pass last night, they're sending Daniel Jones to Canton, Ohio. What'd you take away from his limited action?
Really looked sharp, threw some nice passes. It was the Jets secondary was backups, and I think that's something to take in mind when you're plotting out the future for Daniel Jones and how quickly he's going to take things over. And I thought it was interesting, Pat Shurmur after the game pointing out things that he did wrong that we weren't going to notice because we don't know what was supposed to happen in terms of sending guys in motion, certain reads, things like that. He obviously played well and he overcame it, but those are things that a coach is going to be looking for in terms of how you're going to run an entire offense. And obviously Eli Manning is well versed in those things, and he doesn't make those are the kinds of things he doesn't do. However, Jones, he looked very comfortable. He looked very sure of himself, and I think certainly gave notice that it's going to be sooner rather than later that this changing of the guard is going to take place.
Well, let's get to a precise timetable, because we've been talking about a potential farewell tour for Eli Manning for years. Definitively, do you think this is his last year with Big Blue?
I think barring something an amazing start to the season that then leads to a playoff run and other sorts of accolades for Manning. Yeah, I really do. I think that you don't, as much as they like Dave Gettleman like to talk about this could be a 3-year thing, that's just not the way the NFL works. Not when you're going to be having to pay Eli Manning all that money. If Daniel Jones is a guy you believe in, you have to take advantage of this window to jumpstart a rebuild. The defense, I think, still needs a lot of work with the Giants. And you have to take this time with a cheap quarterback. We've seen it over and over again with different teams. That you can't sit and wait and waste those years of a highly picked quarterback's career, because by the time you actually then are starting him, he's already expensive, and you've blown that chance to build out the rest of your team. I think the Jets are a perfect example of that. I don't know that the Giants go out on a shopping spree with Le'Veon Bell and C.J. Mosley, but the Jets were able to do that because they believe in Sam Darnold and because Sam Darnold makes, you know, minimal money.
Talking NFL with Josh Alper. Check out his good work at ProFootballTalk.com. Eagles played the Titans last night. Carson Wentz got paid in the offseason. No one's doubting he is a franchise quarterback. But, Josh, how concerned are you about the history of injuries going back to North Dakota State, Nick Foles now in Jacksonville, and the Eagles' backup situation suddenly muddled because Nate Sudfeld got hurt last night?
Yeah, the early word is that Sudfeld should be back in the first few weeks of the regular season, which is the best news the Eagles could have gotten once it came out that he broke his wrist. You know, it's his non-throwing wrist. Obviously, that helps. I'm very concerned if I'm the Eagles. I think that, you know, you never like to say injury prone, because the things that have gotten Wentz hurt the last couple of years haven't been because he's out of condition or he's just sort of standing around and things are hurting him. You know, it's football and these guys get hurt, but it is a big concern. And, you know, after Foles, the last 2 years, being able to, I mean, win the Super Bowl and then make it to the playoffs and win a game, it's just, you don't have that sense of confidence with Sudfeld, but you're not going to have that sense of confidence. You didn't have that sense of confidence with Foles when he took over. So I think that you're kind of stuck in this place where there's not anybody out there that's going to be a clear upgrade at this point. Who knows who get, you know, something could shake loose by the end of the preseason. I think it's a concern, but I think it's a concern the Eagles have to live with and really, you know, do everything they can to try and minimize the chance of injury and then just hope for the best.
Let's stay in that division. Earlier in the show, I was talking about how much job security Jason Garrett might have because he's heading into the last year of his contract. So with the popular notion out there that Garrett may have to make it at least to the NFC title game to keep his job, how far do you see the Cowboys going this year?
I think the Ezekiel Elliott question makes it hard to predict that right now. If he's there, I think they are a Super Bowl contender, absolutely a Super Bowl contender. I think as talented a team as there is in the league right now. Without him, I'm not nearly as bullish. And it's not because you can't find a way to have a functional offense without him. I think they can, but I think it's how much their identity was tied into that. And that to all of a sudden turn that all over to a Dak Prescott-centric offense, we saw a couple of years ago that didn't fly. And I think Prescott is a good quarterback. I don't know that he's a great quarterback who can lift his team the way that he would be asked to do. So I think that the Elliott question hangs over everything. And in terms of what that means for Garrett, I think that, you know, I think he's very tied to that and he should be trying to find a resolution to this as hard as anybody, because he's going to be hanging in the balance.
Josh, since you talked about Zeke, I'm looking for informed speculation here. What are the chances this holdout actually spills into the regular season and he misses games that count?
I think there's a decent chance. I'd say around 50-50. I think that because he has that fifth year option next year, he's not in that position where some of Yannick Ngakoue from the Jaguars was in, where if he didn't play this year, he would be a restricted free agent at the end of this season. Or if he didn't report by August 6th, which he did, which was earlier this week. In Elliott's case, he has 2 years to play one to get that year towards unrestricted free agency. Now, I don't know that I'd sit out this year and then expect that I'm just going to be welcomed back in open arms with the Cowboys next year. But he does have that option, and it is something that allows him to be a bit more aggressive in how he handles this holdout.
Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com. I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome here on CBS Sports Radio. Josh, we know that the Steelers embrace continuity. Three head coaches in the last 50 years. Mike Tomlin got the mini extension, but how much of a reset do you anticipate in Pittsburgh moving on without Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell?
I don't anticipate a massive one. I think they got used to life without Bell last year, and I think they're very comfortable with James Conner and Jalen Samuels as the running backs. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the receiver. I think it's always interesting when you see a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster, who was playing alongside Antonio Brown, all of a sudden step up and be the focus of attention for a defense. How they're going to handle that, that's going to be hard to know until the regular season. But he's talented, and the Steelers have shown a knack over the years of developing receivers. You know, they remember there was Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown way back when, and Emmanuel Sanders, and they chose Brown to hold on to. But they, you know, they keep churning these guys out, and Smith-Schuster is the latest one. They have James Washington from last year, Deontay Johnson this year. I think they'll work it out pretty well. My question would be, though, if Antonio Brown is just that much better than the sum of the, you know, some of the numbers that you can put together outside of it in terms of threatening a defense, I think that they can replace his production. I don't know that they can replace him in terms of the game-breaking talent that he is.
Josh, beyond his innate talent, it seems like one of the reasons why Patrick Mahomes was so locked in last year on his way to winning the MVP award was he had the season to learn behind Alex Smith. So given that resume, do you expect him to avoid what will be a sophomore slump looking at his body of work? Didn't play in his true rookie year, last year sensational.
Well, I think it's going to be very hard for him to duplicate last season. There haven't been a lot of quarterbacks to have a season like that, and it really isn't. The guys who have done it once. They've had really good years, other years in their career, but you don't see guys posting years like that over and over and over again. That said, he could be just as effective, even if the numbers aren't as gaudy, by the end of the year. And I think that the fact that he did have that year off, I think makes it even likelier that he'll avoid this major drop-off or any kind of major slump or regression, just because I think that he's got a lot more under his belt than the 18 games he played last year. He's got a lot of time to, you know, he's had a lot of time to analyze and figure out what he can do and how he can do it and exactly how Andy Reid wants to run that offense. And I think that's a perfect situation, especially with, you know, how everything played out with Tyreek Hill. To have him there, I think, is a huge edge.
Josh, as always, we appreciate the information. Thanks for taking the time to join us. Enjoy the games tonight and have a great weekend.
You too, Brian.
Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com, always delivers. In fact, good enough to be our huge call. Brought to you by Dell Small Business Technology Advisors. They offer advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions like computers with Intel Core processors. Call an advisor right now at 877-BY-DELL. In our remaining moments, as we thank our guest, Josh Alper was terrific. PFUTAC, collegefootballtalk.com, hour number one, we had a pro football conversation with NFL insider Jason Cole. Always a lot of people to thank as the fill-in host, and we have to start with the man whose name is on the marquee. And congratulations once more to Jim Rome, because how can you have a Radio Hall of Fame without Jim Rome in it? Long overdue, thrilled that he finally got the call from the hall, induction ceremony coming up in the fall. And what was so entertaining over the last couple of weeks, I know it's tough for you, the listener, especially when I'm in the chair, to listen to a show without Jim. But to hear the sense of gratitude from guys like Kyle Brandt, JT the Brick, Bill Ryder, yours truly. I've told the story before. I'll tell it again. It hit me driving down this morning here in Southern California. 16 years ago this week, I was living with my mother getting ready to go to graduate school. That makes me a clone, living with your parents. I'd had a good run in sports media, hit the wall. I thought I wanted to do other things. And as I started grad school, I would listen to Jim every morning heading into a meaningless marketing class. And in the back of my mind, I thought, maybe I have some unfinished business, and when I get this degree and throw away a lot of money, I'll try one more shot at seeing how things are going to work out in sports media. And here we are 16 years later. So thanks so much to Jim for allowing me to fill in. He's back with you on Monday. Want to thank all the great people at CBS Sports Radio, Mark Chernoff, his staff, Craig Kitchen, our tremendous team, XR4TI, Garrett Ritt, turning the studio into an Oval Office. James Kelly, the flight deck, always dialed in. Thanks to all the clones for listening. Have a great weekend. Jim's back on Monday on CBS Sports Radio.